This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from BFM 89.9. I'm Meera Sivasudhi. Now, after 8 years on the air, we're bringing the Bigger Pictures Health and Living to you, live, on the ground. A whole day with the experts, debunking myths behind heart disease and diabetes, addressing our love affair with food, and of course, George will be there talking about sperm. So join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on Saturday, 2nd of April. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lee Chui Lin. We've probably all been there before. At the end of a long-term, usually romantic relationship, most people are able to eventually recover and move on, but not everyone. Lauren Howe, a researcher from Stanford University, found through her study that rejection makes people redefine themselves and their future romantic prospects. What are the consequences of linking rejection to your core identity? U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist Dr. John Ben Loy is in the studio with me to help break this down. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So let's first identify this. I'm curious, how many people come to see you after breakups or because they're heading towards breakups?
Quite a lot, actually. People do tend to see me as a couples therapist, although I do more than that. So a lot of times people come because their relationships are on the brink or their marriages are breaking up. So I do quite a lot of that work.
How do breakups affect people? I think this is one of those, I find it very interesting because it's so commonplace. Mm-hmm. You know, breaking up is a very commonplace phenomenon. And mm-hmm. yet, I think if you were to ask people, by and large, except for the few brave souls amongst us, mm-hmm. What are some of the things that they fear most or the things that they find most hurtful? I think breakups rank pretty high.
Yes, that's right. We are wired to connect. And when we're in a romantic relationship, it really does have a strong implication to how we see ourselves. So a breakup, particularly if you're the one who has been broken up on, you've been rejected, you know, by your partner, it really can affect your self-esteem, your mood, your health.
That's quite frightening. Mm-hmm. With this study, then, they're looking at how people react to rejection. Could you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so I think this is a pretty interesting study. I actually devoured all of it, the original article. The geek in me has come out. But not just by Lauren Howe, but also Carol Dweck, who's a very seasoned scholar. Basically, looking at how we think about our personalities, what they call implicit person theories. So do you think of yourself or do you think of personalities as fixed or do you see them as malleable? Are they always the same or can they change? So they found that essentially that the more fixed your view is of personality, the more rejection experiences is going to color the way you see yourself, okay? Which then ultimately has outcomes in your fear of rejection reoccurring, lingering negative emotions that whenever you think about the experience of breakup, you really are distressed by it, and also a strong desire to suppress and not talk about it, even the fear that if a previous breakup was brought up, feeling rejected by it, that it would color your present relationship. So what is really interesting to me is that if you have a fixed way of looking at personality or you see personality as fixed and not changeable, that's the indicator that you will have a more negative experience in rejection recovery.
One of the things that I've read about when it comes to rejection, and you read it time and time again, is this: you have to remember that rejection is not personal. I've read mm-hmm. therapists say that, mm-hmm. and I think that in the moment, I can certainly speak for myself, it never feels that way. It always feels very, very personal.
Right.
So when therapists say that rejection is not personal, remember
yes.
that.
Yes.
What are you actually saying? Because I think to the person in the moment, mm-hmm. obviously all you're thinking is, of course it's personal, mm-hmm. it's the most personal.
Yeah. I don't say rejection is not personal, I mean, in my own practice, but I imagine if I heard a therapist say that, they'd probably be trying to say that it's not all about you, right? Sometimes it's about the other partner. sometimes it's contextual, and think about the bigger picture and not just dwell on your negative self-perceptions.
What are some common defense mechanisms when that kind of kick in when rejection is on the horizon?
I think, this kind of goes back to attachment theory. You know, you can even look at children and what they do when their secure person, the caregiver, you know, leaves the room and they're with a stranger. You know, some can pine, some can, kick up a real fuss when they think that they're going to be rejected. That would be an insecure attachment. Some people go, la-di-da, I don't care, but actually they do. Right, so they just sort of ignore it, right? So these are the sort of the two common extremes, right? And then you do have the third one, which is I don't care, and then no, don't leave me, I don't care, no, don't leave me, you vacillate between these.
What determines why a child might have those kinds of reactions? Because they're very recognizable reactions, even in adults.
That's right.
But in adults, I think we attach different reasoning for it. Like when somebody does this, we say, oh, they're proud, or they're guarded, or we have all these reasons for why it might be happening. But for a child, who you assume to be relatively guile-free, guileless, why would these reactions vacillate so much?
When you look at early childhood studies on attachment theory, you do see that children as young as 6 months old already have these natural reactions. So we have to say that it's a kind of environment that has an influence on a child. So do you practice nurturing available behavior as a parent for your child? Or are you sort of sometimes available, sometimes not? The child can't really predict. Or are you dismissive? Or are you scary to be around as a parent? So children being exposed to different kinds of caregiving do exhibit predictable patterns. Now, what is a little bit concerning, my data may be, 5 to 6 years old, but as of, my last reading on it, they are seeing that in mice population, that such insecure parenting, imagine mice versions,
right,
do actually then translate into genetically expressed behaviors. So this is a case whereby nurture actually becomes nature. But it's not fixed. It's still malleable with different parenting that comes along. They put them with different, types of parenting mother mice and see different effects. So I would say it's human, to answer your question.
Is rejection a normal learning experience? Because I think for most people, it's something you just kind of have to get used to. People will say no to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's everywhere. People are going to say no to you. And I worry sometimes when children are a little bit overprotected and coddled, then they don't really learn, how to handle rejection. But what we're talking about here today is romantic relationships, where it really affects how you see yourself.
That's the thing that I wanted to kind of pick up on, because people say no to you, and that's true. People say no to you all the time.
Sure.
You might apply for a job. Mm-hmm. It might be as simple as, people say no to you all the time.
Yeah.
Why does it change so much when this one person upon whom you've kind of hoisted all your hopes says no to you?
Yeah, well, in romantic relationships, so much of yourself is involved in that relationship. How you see yourself is defined by that relationship. So when you are rejected, when you're the one who's been dumped, you begin to question, well, what's wrong with me? It's a pretty natural response, I think. But this study is showing that the more you see personality as fixed, the more trouble you will have recovering from that rejection.
What interests me about the idea of what's wrong with me is, as you say, it's that immediate surge, right? Well, what's wrong with me? Why didn't you love me?
That's right.
But When, at what point is that a useful jumping point for self-investigation, and at what point does it become not useful? At what point does it become self-blame? Because, of course, I think right. it can quite easily dip into that, because nothing might have been wrong with you. You know, you might have just been dating somebody who wasn't right for you or who wasn't ready for a commitment, all sorts of things.
Right. So maybe learning from the experience as opposed to ruminating on the experience, right? So, you know, when you are processing through, you know, how did I play a role in what has, you know, happened in this relationship breakup? See where is the trajectory over time. And it doesn't happen, you know, in one evening. It could sometimes be months, you know, to think it through. Is it making you feel afraid of talking about it? Is it making you feel like something is wrong with you fundamentally in your character? Or are you thinking, okay, how did my behavior contribute to this? How can I do it differently? How was my relationship, how did it impact the other person, the boyfriend or girlfriend, husband, wife? And what did they do as a response? The latter is more dynamic, more about learning from the experience, whereas the former is all about, oh, woe is me, or I don't even want to look at it. It's sort of a doomsday feeling, yeah, that I don't even want to look at. Whereas the other one, I'm peering into it, I am going to recover from this, and I'm going to be really honest to see, you know, where I can improve, and also where the other person could have improved.
I want to talk about moving from that one state to the other, hopefully, see if it's possible. And we'll get to that right after this. I'm speaking today with Dr. John Ben Loy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm speaking, and we're talking about something that's sadly probably very familiar to many of us, relationship rejection. If you would like to give us a call to talk about romantic rejection, to talk about a breakup, if you just need help coping with something at the moment, our phone lines are open. The number to call is 03-77-109-000. You can also text us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio.
You're still here. Good. Now, if you're listening to this podcast while on the treadmill, you're already off to a good start. If you're not, don't forget to join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on the 2nd of April. Find out how you can live a better, healthier life. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on the Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Dr. John Ben Loy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist. Today, we're talking about romantic rejection. If you're a guest at Heartbreak Hotel, if you'd just like to talk about a breakup, if you are just going through something and would like to, you know, get some of that off your chest.
Or you know a friend.
Yes, that's right. If you know of a friend who is going through a romantic rejection, give us a call. Our phone lines are open. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can also text us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Earlier, we were talking about coping with rejection and how one state of it could just be you are kind of, well, wallowing to a certain extent, you know, kind of saying, well, there's something wrong with me.
Right.
And in another state, you're looking at, well, what happens? How can I learn from this? How did my behaviors contribute? How do I move from the wallowing state to the learning state? Because yet again, okay, I'm not going to speak for everyone. I will just speak for myself.
Yeah.
I certainly know that there is a tendency to wallow. You know, it does happen. You're sad, but it can get easy to get lost in that.
Yeah. In this particular research, again, they're looking at implicit person theories. So how fixed do you think your personality is? When we begin to consider that we can change in some fundamental characteristic, then there's hope. I know that I can change something about myself. You know, I know the other person can maybe also change something about themselves. It's not all about who I am and I'm stuck this way. I think that's the highlight of this study, really, is how does this affect our self-concept?
The other thing about rejection in the form of romantic rejection, I think, is also that you don't always know what it is that the other person is rejecting, though. I mean, someone isn't going to specifically say, I mean, sometimes they do and sometimes they don't, but I might not be able to vocalize exactly what I'm rejecting about you. I might just know that you're not right. Yes. You know, so when you're coping with that, how do you deal with that sort of ambiguous rejection where you just know you've been rejected, but you don't know what for?
Yeah. To begin with, you want to try to get some answers from the other person. And if the other person isn't able to give you some answers, honestly and respectfully, I say it probably wouldn't hurt to just say the other person has issues. Because I think if someone is in a committed relationship with you and then they just, you know, end the relationship without any explanation, there's something going on there in them, right? Maybe they found somebody else more suitable, or maybe they find it's too difficult to be with you. I would encourage the one leaving without an explanation to confront their fear of, you know, giving a satisfactory explanation.
As a therapist, what do you do when you meet a client who has a fixed mindset, somebody mm-hmm. who believes that their personality is fixed and mm-hmm. that some fundamental part of them has been rejected? Mm-hmm. Are they more difficult to reach out to speak to than someone with a growth mindset?
I would say it takes more care on the part of the therapist to walk more slowly with them. To be able to help them slowly experience acceptance by the therapist. We do have a role as therapists to give our clients a safe relational experience through therapy. And, you know, not just the relational experience, but also understanding, insight. But through the experience of safety with the therapist, clients can bounce from a very fixed mindset to a more open mindset. So I do have an example of two different clients, both women, who had experienced marital problems. And one that I worked with for several years, in the beginning, very fixed mindset, not just only about her ex, but also about a lot of different people. And over the years, I've seen such amazing shift in the way she sees herself as now sort of, I can change, I can make choices. I don't need to be so angry at people who, you know, always sort of reject me subtly or explicitly, both. And then another one who's fairly new client to me, who I'm seeing really struggling right now with, but what's wrong with me? I don't want to see, you know, my oncoming, you know, ex. It's just really hard. Having seen my former client, or the one that I've worked with longer, make that shift over the years, I am very hopeful that that people can change from a fixed mindset to a more adaptive, malleable mindset. This study was very interesting. Actually, it's five different studies compiled into one article. In the fifth study, what they actually did was they manipulated the scenario. So in one group, sort of randomized control groups, in one group, they gave them a scenario of sort of the fixed personality, you know, showed them an article. The participants had to read an article called Three Critical Factors That Shape Who You Are, sort of that this is how you became who you are. And in the other article, it was three ways to shape who you are, sort of three ways you can
act
alter.
Upon it.
That's
yeah.
right. And they found differences. They found that the group that's exposed to the fixed mindset actually did more poorly in a rejection scenario as opposed to the one that was exposed to a more incremental or malleable mindset, more adaptive, let's say. Right? So even just exposure to an article, you can see the difference in an experimental study. So there's a lot of hope. That's why I'm very, very excited about this article. There's a lot of hope. I see it clinically, and now we are seeing it experimentally.
We're talking about romantic rejection today, but we're also talking about whether or not you believe your personality to be fixed, you know, that mm-hmm. it is just what it is. Or do you believe that your personality can change and that people can change? Give us a call if you'd like to weigh in. Can people change, or are people just who they are? That number is 03-7710-9000. You can also text us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. How is rejection linked to insecurity?
I would say it's linked quite a bit, especially if you have had a lot of sort of rejections, particularly from childhood. It will begin to impact how you feel about yourself, you know, and also how securely you will approach new relationships. So early childhood experiences, you know, when you have sort of developed an insecure attachment style, it does lead to more failures as an adult. So one client of mine experienced from a very, very young age, her parents, you know, always leaving her to the babysitter. Yeah. She's trying to cling on to the parents, you know, as they go off to another location to work and wouldn't come back for, you know, for days. That was devastating for her. And then it resulted in sort of an ongoing series of rejection type experiences. And probably once we've experienced something negative as a child, we also may facilitate interactions that also invite other people to reject us, if you know what I mean, right?
Well, that's the thing. How much of rejection is also a matter of perception? Because mm-hmm. you might not actually be rejecting me. I'm just receiving it as a rejection.
Yes.
And then behaving as such. You know, is that part of what we're talking about?
Yes. Here we're talking about actual rejections, mm-hmm. right? Or simulated imaginary scenarios of actual rejection. So people leaving the relationship, you know, they've left you. So it's not perception in that way.
Yeah.
But there is...
But moving on from that, you might perceive rejections that aren't actually there. Like moving on after a breakup in which you were rejected, you might, for example, have your defenses raised, you know, and everything just going at all systems. And you might see rejections that are not actually present.
Yes, exactly. So that's what they studied for. They studied for the lingering impact. And those who have a more fixed mindset towards personality will have a more lingering impact of believing that, you know, others will be tending to reject them. They're sort of fear, sort of primed to expect the worst.
Why is it ever helpful for people to look to themselves as the reason for rejection instead of trying to look towards something else, you know, external factors or their behaviors as opposed to their fundamental selves?
I think that it's good to consider everything. That's how I approach it, very systemically, not systematically, which is step by step, mm-hmm. systemically, meaning the whole and its interactions. My behaviors are a part of it. Another person's behaviors are also a part of it. My core self may actually be okay, but it may not be a good fit with the other person. And the other person didn't quite know how to handle that. Maybe there are parts of my core self that I need to change and improve. You know, can I risk talking to some safe people who can give me honest, loving feedback about that?
Is rejection also linked to defensive or aggressive behavior, emotionally aggressive, not physically aggressive behavior in relationships, in that because you have a fear of it, you end up becoming more defensive?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And some people will have almost like a trigger response. Oh, no, you know, the person is, you know, particularly if they've been cheated on before, right? Oh, no, is my boyfriend looking at another woman? You know, what's going on here? So, and that could spark off reactions that are negative, whether it's verbal or sometimes even physical. Absolutely.
What role does self-esteem play in how people receive and perceive rejection?
Well, if you have a healthy sense of self, and by that I don't mean an overly inflated ego, okay? So self-esteem is not sort of the more I have the more I love myself, the better. It's kind of like I love myself up to a point of realistically loving myself, not going beyond that, right? That's healthy. So yes, healthy self-esteem is very important to be able to handle difficult life situations, including being rejected in a relationship.
And do people with a fixed mindset experience greater blows to their self-esteem because they believe that it's a rejection of their fundamental self as opposed to a rejection of, you know?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Now, the authors didn't use the word self-esteem,
right.
But I would say it's probably the same thing, you know, if you look at it on a practical level.
In that case, for most people, would you say that we all should be in a growth mindset? Is that what would be kind of the healthiest place to be?
How many yeses can I say? Yes, 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 yes.
But what... How would we know whether or not we're in a fixed or growth mindset? So if we were kind of trying to take our own emotional and mental temperature right now, you know, if we were sitting here and going, I wonder what kind of person I am listening to this show. I wonder how I deal with rejection.
Yes. How
would we do that? Because I would prefer to do that now, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than have to face it in the face of rejection, rather than, you know, trying to deal with it in a moment of trauma.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that you can do to give you an indication of your mental well-being, if you will, and that includes concept of self. So there are self-esteem scales that one can do a quick check-off list, and it'll give you an indication. There's a book by Burns, B-U-R-N-S. I can't remember. It's sort of a 10 days to better moods or something like that. It's a very old classic book. In it, he has a lot of different scales and questionnaires, including self-esteem. But when you're thinking about how can I learn if I can be more prepared for rejection in a relationship, past behavior should tell you. And also good friends can tell you. You know, we really want to hear what good friends have to say about our behavior as a mirror.
The book in question is 10 Days to Self-Esteem by David D. Burns.
There
so if people
go.
Wanted to look that up,
well done.
Yes, that's what it would be called.
Yeah.
How does rejection shape our personalities? I think ideally we would like it not to.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about how our childhood experiences can affect that.
Yes.
But moving forward, say you've experienced a really huge rejection.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that you really loved has now turned you away.
Yeah.
How does that shape you moving forward?
Yeah. To begin with, I would say grieving is normal. You know, if you're going to feel sad, if you're going to feel unsure about yourself, all of that is normal. Doesn't mean something is wrong with you. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have a mindset of fixed personality. But after some time, if you're able to get good social support, from your friends, if you're able to talk about these things, if you're not sort of hiding it and it's sort of eating into your body, so to speak, the angst, right? You're not acting out in destructive behaviors or self-harming behaviors. And you can say, wow, that was painful, and I can still feel some of that pain, but here are some things I'm glad from the experience, then you're probably in a good, healthy place. Yeah. So rejection is particularly in intimate relationships, it's not easy and it's not supposed to be la-di-da, you know, there we go. Oh, that's his fault. You know, I'm fine. I can change. It's probably not really, examining it deep enough.
Does it take a long time? Earlier you said grief is normal and, that's true, but a lot of people kind of want to... There's this mindset of, get over it. You know, after a while,
right.
You tell yourself that.
Right.
Your friends will tell you that.
Right.
And then I think people can set arbitrary timelines even, and say that, okay, fine, I'm going to... In 3 months' time, I'm going to be a new woman.
Yes.
Is that healthy? Because, again, I think we come back to that fine line between wallowing and actually getting over it, actually moving on.
Yeah. I always tell people that I work with, you're ready when you're ready. I am very much against the act of telling someone to get over it. Because if they could get over it, don't you think they would have already? Who wants to wallow?
Nobody wants to live like this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So telling someone else to get over it may be more a reflection of our own discomfort with their pain. Right. And so if we can't carry their pain, we can say, hey, why don't you go and see a counselor, who's paid to carry your pain and journey with you? Yeah. So you're ready when you're ready. And if you want to say 3 months' time, I'm a new woman, good for you. And if comes, you know, 3 months' time, you were a new woman for 10 days and then you were down again, that's all right. It's a roller coaster ride, but it will begin to ease as you actively look to heal.
The piece of research also talked about how people with a fixed mindset can sometimes carry quote-unquote baggage, you know, because you've decided that this is, I don't know, you have this one fundamental flaw in yourself and you start kind of almost pathologizing it, I think, to a certain extent. You don't want to tell people about it. How does that affect going forward, you know, trying to move ahead? Is that the kind of thing you would say needs to be cleared up before you enter another relationship?
I would say it's good to clear it up whether or not you're entering into another relationship. Fixating on one particular aspect of yourself that may be problematic and it may be objectively problematic, it's not going to help you to cope into the future. You know, I think of Deadpool because I just watched it, you know, and how he had this scarred face, right? And then he has this strong fixed mindset that his girlfriend would not accept him. Oh, spoiler alert, too late. You know, his girlfriend would not, you know, accept him back. And, you know, that proved to be wrong. You know, sure, okay, it's a...
That's the spoiler.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. There you go. You want to face the situation for what it really is.
While we have Deadpool, you know, still floating around the studio, when it comes to rejection, I think men are often told to be better at receiving it. You know, just take it like a man, be tough and move on. And and this idea that you are just going to shrug it off and move on to the next woman is even more prevalent, you know, among men than it is among women. Women are kind of allowed our emotional space because we're thought of as more emotional anyway.
Yeah. You carry the tissues.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And we hand them out to our girlfriends. But from your perspective, you're sitting there as a couples therapist.
Yes.
How do men and women react differently or the same to romantic rejection?
Yeah. Typically, men will distract themselves. Right. In fact, I was just having a conversation with Marcy Heschel, who was here, you know, a couple months ago. Right. That men will tend to distract. But it's not necessarily a good thing, but it's a coping mechanism nevertheless. And women will tend to ruminate, you know, in their grief. So distraction can work to help you function, but how are you distracting yourself? Are you distracting yourself in healthier ways or less healthy ways? If you're distracting yourself by, you know, what do they call it when you bounce into another relationship?
Rebound.
Yeah, when you're going for rebound and, you know, breaking hearts along the way, probably you might want to stop doing that and have a little, you know...
a little rumination, maybe.
A little check into what might be going on.
If someone, we've been focusing on romantic rejection, I think, because that's the focus of the study, but also because by and large, I think romantic rejection is the one that you think of most as rejection, you know? But if someone receives that, if someone gets that hurt, will they then carry the effects of this rejection to the rest of their life, to other non-romantic pursuits and bring that feeling of, oh, I'm unloved or I'm unworthy?
I think it can. Depends on the person and depends on how badly it has affected their psyche, so to speak, or the sense of self. The more badly it's affected you, it can spill over into other domains, family domains, work domains, you know, social domains. And I've seen that. I've seen such things take place, particularly younger childhood experiences. So if you're experiencing, you know, these kinds of rejections or abandonment, is another word to use for children, then it can color your whole sense of self and therefore affect all aspects of your life. Yeah. But typically, if you've had a fairly healthy, nurturing parent, caregiving as growing up, you will be able to bounce back. That's what I believe. This study did not look at childhood factors in their selection of participants. And so that's one of the things that clinically I would observe and say, yes, your childhood experiences do play a factor.
One thing that worries me, listening to what you just said, is what if you didn't have a good childhood? I mean, that's out of your control. Like, yes. like that's not something that you as a child had any agency over at all.
That's right.
So if you're kind of moving into adulthood and carrying the scars of insecure attachment, of your parents not being around, or just all sorts of things, you know, how do you clear out that debris and ready yourself for this world that is, as we say, filled with rejection? You just have to cope.
So the most important one, I would say, is positive relationships, counter negative relationships. So the more positive relationships you have, grow as an adult, to overcome your negative childhood relational experiences, is to have good positive relationship experiences. And that's what the therapist or the counselor or psychologist is supposed to do in a professional capacity. Now that's, you know, not everybody needs to go and see a mental health professional, but you can also find that amongst friends. But be open to seeing how your early experiences might have shaped you into to have behaviors that push people away, that make you a little bit prickly with people, or make you a bit distant and kind of cold to people, and how people then may find you not easy to get along with. And when you're open to seeing that you do have negative traits, right, and behaviors that are changeable, that's very important. They are malleable. But when you're open to that, then you can begin to learn to have more positive relationships.
What are positive ways that we can deal with rejection? So as opposed to the rebound / broken hearts littered around your neighborhood method, know, or I don't know, when we're dealing with it right now, I mean, if someone's listening and they're right in the thick of it, you know, they're kind of really
and
experiencing
I'm sure there's a bunch of people.
But there
right
always
now.
Are. Yeah. That's the sad truth of relationships. So if that were that being the case, what would you suggest? What are some positive ways to start dealing with it?
Yeah. To begin with, seek clarity, I think, from the partner who may have rejected you. Try to find out what happened. Why do they, you know, why did they want to leave? You know, give me a good reason. Right. And when the reason comes, take it as what it is. And, you know, whether it's true or it's not true, that's what the person is able to give to you. Definitely have a few close people that you can talk to, you know, to get their perspective of what may have happened. Some people, particularly in marriages, you know, you might want to work towards repairing that. But, you know, sometimes you might want to say, well, maybe it's better for me to let this person go, especially if they have left you again and again. Maybe there are some issues going on there. But recovery for yourself is possible. Yeah, always think it is possible and think, I can learn something from this. It's not always all about me, which is what you started off by saying, right? It's not necessarily about you. Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming in. I think that about covers it. Hopefully, you know, if anyone's listening and you're going through some hard times, that helped. I've been speaking with Dr. John Ben Loy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist. We've been discussing romantic rejection today on Health and Living. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.